This is
BuzzFeed Audio.
BuzzFeed Audio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. I am Tommy Wesley. I am the Director of Development here at BuzzFeed, and this is BuzzFeed Brews. It's our interview series with celebrities, politicians, and newsmakers. Joining us this afternoon is the star of one of the world's most beloved franchises. He's become even more fascinating as he has moved on from Harry Potter with smart, unexpected, and redefining career choices. Currently, he's starring on Broadway in the Tony-nominated revival of Martin McDonagh's The Cripple of Inishmon. And later this summer, you can catch him in the romantic comedy What If. Please join me in welcoming Daniel Radcliffe.
Thank you very much.
Daniel, thank you so much for joining us at our New York headquarters.
Yeah, thanks. This is awesome. Wow, what a crowd.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So I'm starting with a hard one.
Okay.
I have to know where your allegiances lie. Hedwig the Owl or Hedwig on Broadway?
Well, being that I'm going to see it on Sunday, I guess Hedwig on Broadway. But I don't make me choose.
Okay.
They're also hard things to compare.
Yeah, I think so. This is your third time being on Broadway, being on The Great White Way. Obviously, you transferred in Equus in 2008 while you were still doing Potter.
Yes.
Then you proved that you were a triple threat when you came with How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, right as Potter was ending. And now you're back in this dark comedy.
Very
dark, but it's a very interesting role, and I just want to know what drew you to the part. And obviously what drew you to all of these parts. They're very different. Equus, obviously, is a psychological play.
I've always been interested in doing theater. My parents took me to loads of theater as a kid. I always liked doing things that I thought would surprise people or doing Equus was never like I wanted to shock people but the content of that play, aside from the nudity, is pretty rough. So it's, I suppose I wanted to challenge myself and I wanted to be on stage and work like that, and doing a musical here was definitely the thing I'm kind of most proud of that I've ever done, because it was the thing I was most terrified of before, because New York is sort of the home of the musical, and so to come here and not having ever done one before, I thought people might just be like, who's this kid trying to come over here and do what we do better than that, which I definitely didn't do.
I mean,
better,
and you're carrying the show there. It's like eight shows a week, singing, dancing, and acting.
It was one of the best experiences I've ever had. And again, always the thing that makes me, I suppose, pick something is the idea of doing something new that I haven't done before, or getting to tackle something that, in this case, like there was obviously an Irish accent and a physicality that went along with the role. But the main thing that drew me to Cripple of Inishmon was just the script. Like, I'm sure loads of people know Martin McDonagh's work from In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths, and he's an amazing writer. And I don't think anyone currently really working, or not many people I'm aware of, combine incredibly funny dialogue, and it is like it's funny throughout with just brutal and depressing stuff that also kind of goes with it. He holds those two tones simultaneously, and he's awesome. And he's also a really nice guy, which makes it a lot easier.
So you mentioned the physicality in the show. It's remarkable. I mean, how did you decide which direction to go with this?
Basically, for anyone that doesn't know, The Cripple of Inishmon is about a young guy called Billy, who I play, who lives with a disability. But in the script, Martin was never specific about the exact type of disability that Billy lived with. So it's a little bit up to you to kind of determine what it might be. And through reading the script and certain details that kind of are given away, me and a friend of mine who I was working on it with decided that it could be a specific form of cerebral palsy called hemiplegia. So we just went about, and then I started sort of having. Oh, hello. I can fix that for you later if you like it. This hooks back on. So what was I saying? It probably wasn't as funny as that.
No. But I'm more interested in what you're saying. You're talking about how you figured out how to do this.
The physicality, and I also don't want to like kind of sit up here and say, oh, the physicality's so demanding and it's so hard, because there are people that live with this condition and live with it all day, and rather than just like playing at it for a couple of hours a day. But it is something that you want to make authentic, because you know that there, people out there do live with this condition, and so you don't want to just be lazy about it and do something that doesn't do justice to it, I suppose, and something that other people would find offensive. So that was, you know, all things that I was keen to avoid.
But you do have to maintain it 8 shows a week. Yeah. And I mean, when I saw the performance, I was like, he is getting a core workout the entire time. I mean, how do you do that?
I mean,
is it painful?
It's not painful. It's one of those things, I think people come and see the show and they think, God, that looks really painful. How does he do that? But my body has just sort of got used to it now. I don't know if that's a good thing either, but it's like, I am very, it feels fine now. And it also, like, because one of the things in the show is that my leg is kind of straight out for a lot of the show, and so my character sits down, his leg sort of stays out. And I try doing that, if I was to do that sort of just at home, I do, like, after 5 minutes, I'm going, oh, Jesus, this is a lot of work. But I think because there's an audience there and there's 1,000 people there, like, it's incentive not to ruin the play.
No, I mean, it's remarkable. The entire time I was like, how is he doing it?
Dancing was a lot harder, though. The Broadway show, sort of that schedule of that, you know, the hardest working people in, I think, in like the entertainment industry are dancers on Broadway, just because like what they have to do every night, 8 nights a week, and the what their bodies go through, and the kind of discipline to like keep themselves healthy and fit is amazing. That's the wonderful thing about not doing a musical anymore, is that you can wake up the next day and go, I don't care how my voice sounds, and I don't care how my body feels.
I mean, one thing I also loved about, you know, the anticipation of this production coming was the producers, they made such a huge effort to make the show accessible to people. I think they had $10,000 tickets offered at $27,
yeah,
which is unheard of on Broadway most times.
Absolutely. I mean, it was something that Michael had done during the London production as well, was that there's, you know, because there is a danger that theatre becomes, particularly with, you know, prices on Broadway, which are unbelievable. It's unaccessible to people that it's being written for, and the people that who want to see the shows can't necessarily. And Michael Grandage, our director, his whole ethos is about getting people into the theatre. So in London, we did a thing which was the £10 tickets, where there was like about 100,000 tickets sold for £10 throughout the run of all 5 shows last year, and we wanted to do like a similar thing here.
So do you think that has an effect on the next generation of performers and artists? I mean, you are a young person who's had incredible opportunities, but a lot of people aren't exposed to the arts now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was very lucky as a kid. I was taking the theater all the time. I was watching films all the time. But you know, I see tons of young people in the theatre. And if part of that is because, you know, I am who I am and have, you know, obviously Potter behind me as well, like, if that brings people in to see a Martin McDonagh show or a Peter Shaffer show as well, that's, you know, that's awesome and unexpected, so it's great.
So now, this is your third time on Broadway. Do you have pre-show rituals, superstitions? What do you have to do to get ready for this?
I don't really. I think, like, I should probably start answering this question and build up more of a mystique to my pre-show ritual, because I really, like, I just get there and I put my costume on and then, you know, and it's also about seeing everyone before the show more than anything else, and kind of checking in with all the other sort of members of the cast. Because otherwise, when you get into a long run, you can do this thing where you might only see each other on stage that night, and you'll do your scenes and then come off and just not happen to see each other. And then that's a weird relationship where you're only just pretending to be these people and then you don't see each other. So it's when you get into the theatre, it's just sort of, I like just going around and seeing everybody and like smoking on the fire escape or not. And you know, and I have this really weird thing as well before we go on for the first scene, Pat and I, Pat plays Johnny Patin, and my aunties start the play off, and they're sort of on stage for the first scene. Then me and Pat hide around the corner. I just have this thing, we say, like, have a good show every night, which has now become a superstitious ritual. And then I also have this fear, which makes no sense, that, because my first entrance is through a door, and I always have this fear that for some reason the action of going through a door will make me forget my first line. So, which is not a thing that happens. But I just repeat my first line a lot before I go on. So that's my preparation, guys. If you want to do it, just repeat the lines loads to yourself.
All right. So why do you keep coming back? What is it about the Broadway community?
The Broadway community is incredibly special. I feel like it's a thing you probably hear English actors talk about all the time, and maybe get bored of hearing us talk about, but it is amazing that you come over here and are so welcomed. And there's loads of events, like, you know, the Gypsy of the Year Awards and the, like, Broadway Bears, which I think is this Sunday. And there's loads of, like events which mean that all the shows mix all the time and the kind of this interaction and everyone, you know, you send every time you open a show here, you get like opening night wish, congratulations and good luck messages from every other show on Broadway, which is so cool. And nothing like that really exists in the West End, and I have no idea why. But it's, yeah, it's definitely, there is something about the Broadway community that is very special, especially as an outsider coming into it, yeah. Thinking, especially as someone who's like a film actor mainly, or started off as that, and you know, you sometimes feel there's a bit of resentment or like about, you know, taking jobs from other people who are, you know, hardworking theatre actors or something, which, you know, I obviously don't agree with, but you know, it's so you kind of had a lot of nervousness around all that, so to be so kind of welcomed has been great.
So if you were going to do another show, you know, would you do Broadway or West End? Do you have a preference?
I'd obviously like to do both. I love New York and I love living here and working here as well. So I would probably choose Broadway, I guess, because it also, yeah, I just, I guess as well, in London growing up, I was mainly doing the Potter films. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't like a natural time in my life when I was making kind of a social circle of friends who lived in my area. All my friends in London work in film, so they're like, have kids and are working all the time and work us. Whereas here I've done two shows and a film now, so I have like a load of like friends here and like much more of a social life here than I do in London. I feel like I'm a bit of a hermit at home.
So do you think you'd do another musical?
I would love to do another musical. It's really, really hard work, so I don't want to do it for a while.
What would you want to do?
But it's, I don't know what it would be. I would love to do, I miss dancing. You know, I never danced in my life before I'd done that show, and I was terrified of it. And but to get to the stage where I got at it and loving it, now I really miss it. And I miss, yeah. There was something about that company as well that was, we had a reunion the other day of all the How to Succeed cast, and it was great. It was, you know, I don't know how many shows, you know, it's been just my experience, but I don't know how many shows everyone would say that they, like 2 years on, there are reunions happening where everyone turns up. It was a very special group of people.
So no particular role?
I wouldn't like to say, because there are some roles in Sondheim that I would obviously love to do, but equally I'm not sure I could sing it. I would require so many lessons before I would say, oh, I want to do that. But yeah, I don't know. I've practiced a lot of, with my singing teacher is also the singing like coach on Jersey Boys in London. So I have ended up doing a lot of Frankie Valli songs in practice, but I don't see that ever transitioning into like a longer term run.
You don't want to give us a taste of that?
No, I don't. That's definitely not why I brought it up. It was just like an anecdotal thing. It wasn't like, let me sing. Walk like a man.
Oh, man. Okay. You know, you have another, you know, Rupert Grint has actually just announced this week. He's coming to Broadway. He's in a revival of Terrence McNally's It's Only a Play. What advice would you give him? Have you talked to him? Did you help?
I don't have. The last time I saw Rupert was at the What's on Stage Awards in London after when he was getting an award for Mojo, which is a show he did over there. And it was just lovely. Like, it was so nice to see him and see him so... I don't know, he was so excited to be doing the show, and he had such a great cast around him, as he does in It's Only a Play. Yes. And so, you know, I don't have any advice. He's just going to have a great time. I mean, that's the thing. I suppose my only piece of advice would be get involved with as much of the Broadway stuff as you possibly can, because it is great fun, and it's a really rewarding community to be a part of.
And they announced, actually, I think last fall, that they're going to do, like, a pre-Hogwarts... Harry story on the West End with J.K. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It seems very interesting. It does seem very interesting. I have no idea what it is going to be or what it is. Is it a straight play or a musical?
It's a straight play.
Okay. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm sure. You know, Joe Rowling's involved in it, right?
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm sure it's like she's got a careful eye and would never let anybody do anything that she wasn't happy with. So, you know, I trust her, but yeah, I had no idea what it's going to be about or any information on it.
Really,
I have like a really...
About that, you have thoughts?
No, I mean, it was something like the idea of a Harry Potter musical was something we joked about a lot on set, like, but not in any kind of a serious people should do this way.
Would you see it? Do you think I'll see it?
I'll like put on a cap and a beard or something and sneak in, but I won't be at the opening night.
Okay. Understandable. Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious to know, too, you know, with Harry Potter, like, what was your first experience with the series? You know, not the film, the book. What do you remember about it?
My first experience with them was my I guess, my dad reading them to me. I remember he did an excellent voice of the basilisk, which used to terrify me as a child. And I'd only read the first two, and I wasn't really as into it as everyone else in my class was, but just because I wasn't really a reader. And so it was like, oh, books, I'm not really into that. And I kind of got into it later on. And then when I got the part, what was interesting, and there is a funny moment, which is quite sweet when I think back to it, was that I was reading the fourth book when we started making the first movie. And I remember being in my hotel room in Newcastle when we were about to go out and shoot like the first scenes on the platform at 9 3/4 and everything. And I remember being in my room reading passages of the books and getting really excited and like pretending to be Harry and the character in the books and like jumping around my room, like acting out bits of what I would then be acting out for real like 6 years later with Ralph Fiennes. Weird, yeah, I know. Yeah. My life is weird.
I mean, so, you know, this has been obviously such a defining thing. Do you ever encounter anyone who doesn't know or doesn't care about Harry Potter at all?
Yes.
And how do you feel?
But it's always like, I feel like with... Occasionally you'll meet somebody who absolutely has no idea what it is, or even the books or the films, and like is kind of, you know, I don't know how they manage that, but well done. I mean, that's some work that takes to be that oblivious. But I don't know, with I feel like a lot of the times when people aren't into the books, aren't into the films, they tell me almost to make a point. Like, oh, I'm not into that, you know, that children's stuff. You know, it's like they're somehow above it. Which is like a lot of the time I feel like people, not always, but yeah, I definitely feel that sometimes when people, it's like some people, there's the particular thing that like English, like teenage English boys will say to me when they don't want to admit to liking Harry Potter, which is they'll come up and say, I loved you in Extras, which is like an episode of Ring Debate. And I always know when someone's saying that, they're like, you're just avoiding saying Harry Potter now.
I mean, has there ever been moments or a time when you regretted taking the role?
No, not really. There's obviously, there are moments in your life, and if you, you know, become a famous person and are somebody that is looked at by the media, and particularly the British media, who can be, you know, quite dogged in their pursuit of people. You know, there are times at those moments when you're like, oh God, this, well, you know. But it never, that's the thing, there was never a question about it, because the Daily Mail writing stories or paparazzi outside the theatre or whatever it is always vastly outweighed by the fact that I get to have this awesome job mm-hmm. and do this job. And that's, I feel like a lot of people, that's why you see some people in the media who, I don't know, react badly to certain situations because it's not the job that they really like, and so this other thing that they thought they wanted is now this like terrible thing that is invading their life. And so whereas if what you get a high off and what you're into is the work and being on set, then you kind of be all right, I guess.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like you missed out on certain things of your childhood or adolescence? I mean, obviously you haven't had a sense of normalcy probably since the day you were cast.
Well, I mean, you can say yes and no, but also like I am quite philosophical about this because I sort of have to be, but I don't know what normal is. I only know my version of normal, and I know parts of my life are weird. Like, I know having like the most famous actor in the world teach you bass guitar when you're 14 is a weird thing, you know, like and having those experiences with those people. But I mean, yeah, I consider my life as normal as it can be, but I still think like, I don't, in terms of missing out on things. I mean, obviously I didn't go to college, like a lot of people tell me I missed out there.
I mean, is that something you ever wanted to do? I mean, Emma obviously did.
Yeah, Emma
did
really
that.
Did, and I really didn't want to. Like, I had the option of, you know, I suppose I could have done what she did and you know, prioritize school in that way, but to be honest, I'd never liked school that much. Like, Emma was always like, Emma loved the academic side of things, and like, if you know, that was always very much her. And I knew that I wanted to act and to be working, and I thought, I just felt like any time away from that would be time I would be spending going, oh, I could be on a set right now. Because that was always how I felt. Like, when I was having tuition on set and had fantastic teachers and really, really enjoyed being taught by them, but I'd still be sitting there going, like, when are they going to call me to set? Because, you know, that's what I love.
Did you wish Emma congratulations on graduating from Brown?
I haven't spoken to her in, like, ages, so, but yes, congratulations, Emma.
Yeah. Do you have any advice that you'd give your 11-year-old self prior to all of this?
Not at all. I mean, I think I've, like, coped fairly okay. I mean, people always seem to be, like, amazed by how not a dick I am. So that's, I guess, like, that's something good. I get that all the time. Like, I get people just being like, why are you nice? Like, why are you like this? I don't know. I don't know another way to be. Sorry, that sounds kind of, you know, even that sounds sort of slightly self-aggrandizing. But it is.
It's got to be exhausting. I mean, you're always having to be on for the fans, being on for everyone else. I mean, that's hard.
I always have to be. Like, I mean, I do have my own time at home, and I do spend time, like, I think that's probably why I am so, you know, I end up, like, my favourite thing to do is just to go around someone's house and hang out with them, like, because it's easy, and also, that's, you know, I enjoy the company of my friends, and it's a very simple pleasure, but that's all I'd rather be doing. So, no, it's not something that, like, gets in the way the whole time, and also, frankly, a lot of the time people are really nice. I had an experience once where I was at a Reading Festival in England, which is an awesome music festival, and I was standing two rows behind this guy who had married and then treated very badly a former Big Brother contestant. And he was, like, quite a sort of well-known English celebrity at the time, but, like, hated. And the abuse that he took for 2 hours, like, you know, I felt really sorry for him. And I was just sitting there thinking, God, I'm so lucky to be famous for something that people like and, like, actually love. Really love, you know. Yeah. And it is incredibly special to a lot of people. And, you know, that really doesn't get old when you have people coming up to you saying, like, you were such an important part of my childhood, or, you know, you were, that's very, very cool.
Yeah. So we have to all assume that you're done playing Harry Potter forever.
Yes. Yeah.
But obviously the world lives on. There's Diagon Alley. You know, they're going to make a trilogy out of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
I find out so much of what I know about Potter through interviews now.
I mean, what is it like to see that world continue on and that you're not going to be a part of it? Like, what advice, I guess, do you have for people who enter that world?
It's great. I mean, it's hard to say because I don't know if it will be the same world. I could give more people better advice on how to enter Star Wars because I know that's basically the same crew as did Harry Potter. Like, all my friends have gone onto that movie and a lot of people are working on that. But in terms of the people who are making the Magical Beasts, the Fantastic, you know, I don't know who's going to be, like, filming them or where they're going to be. So I don't know what it'll be like. I'm very happy that, you know, I meet people at Stage Door all the time who, like, still obviously have such a hunger for that world and that world to continue. But I see no reason why it shouldn't. And I feel like if I had dropped out of the series halfway through, like, the original series, then I would have regretted it for the rest of my life. But I feel like having spent 10 years there and worked really hard on it and loved every second, then I don't feel there was, you know, I can enjoy watching it grow and go on without feeling like, oh, I wish I was there.
I mean, it's been 4 years pretty much since it's wrapped. I mean, and that was, like you said, your home for 10 years pretty much. What do you miss the most?
I miss the people. I miss certain people on the crew, particularly, like, my dresser who on the films was a guy called Will, who I haven't seen in, like, a couple of years now, because it's, you know, I'm over here and he's working on stuff out in Australia, and it's all like, it just, you know, it we have never overlapped. So I miss the people on the crew more than anything else. And occasionally, I got a bit of it back on Frankenstein, because I did a film called Frankenstein, which apparently will now be called Victor Frankenstein.
Yes.
So we did, I had a bit of it on that again, where you walk onto sets and go, wow, this is amazing. But the thing that, you know, Stuart Craig's sets on the Harry Potter films were just, because it is the kind of thing where if that's the world you just end up going into, you don't question it at all. And you don't question that there are, you know, millions of pounds being spent on sets, which are huge. I mean, they're buildings, practically. And they're, you know, beautiful and amazing. And that's why I think the actual ride and all that stuff at Diagon Alley and all that stuff looks so brilliant because Stuart Craig has designed it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's why it's so popular. But it's, and I guess also, like, the other thing is, not that it's something I miss, but it's a difference between doing Potter. Because basically every film is the same, whether you have a budget of, you know, 200,000 or, you know, 200 million. It's chaos and nobody, you know, everyone's always struggling to find information about what's going on next. And it's always like that. And there's a kind of idea that because the budget might be bigger, that stuff might go away, but it absolutely doesn't. There's something, you know, like, for example, I did a recce on Kill Your Darlings, which is obviously, like, a much smaller budget film, and they said, oh yeah, we were doing a recce outside, and they were like, oh yeah, this will be great. This is the day we'll have the crane. And in my head, I was like, oh yeah, they won't just have two cranes lying around every day. Because that's what we had on Potter. We just had two massive crane cameras that were there just whenever we needed them, that of course cost like tens of thousands to rent for a day. So it's crazy.
And I mean, you're forever.
So what I'm saying is, I miss the money.
I mean, it has to be bizarre too. There's certain people like Rupert and Emma and JK. You know, you are forever kind of connected with them, or everyone's always asking you. And I obviously have to ask you. You know, JK Rowling recently came out in opposition of Scottish independence and donated money to that campaign. And I'm. I think you can see where it's going. But she wrote a huge blog post about it, and obviously has lived there. But I'm just curious to know your opinions on that.
I can totally see why like some people in Scotland might want independence. I personally I like the UK being how it is, but it's also not up to me. Get a say in the future of Scotland, which is fair. I'm sure they'll make the right decision for their country.
Good answer. Yes. I mean, obviously, but like she, you know, received social media just like attacked her, and like that has to be something that's so difficult for you to see, or you know, things are said. You're not actively engaging on social media at all.
I'm completely unaware of all of this.
I mean, is that why you've made that conscious decision?
Yeah, I mean, it is just a whole lot of craziness in social media. For people I genuinely don't understand why people in my... I think Twitter and all that is brilliant for some things. It's brilliant for, it's brilliant for some people keeping in contact and communicating and, you know, like, if you've got, like, a business or something, you know, that people, you know, then it's... there are some things that it's great for, but personally for me and... I am not that like concise anyway, so I wouldn't do well on it as a format. But also, I find that something that actors do with it that always worries me is that they create like a slightly false impression of intimacy with another group of people. That like that interaction, I think, sometimes means so much more to the people who aren't the actor in it than it does to the actor. That it creates a kind of an imbalance, which I don't think is kind of fair. I think it's a little bit phony sometimes. Not to say that everybody that uses Twitter is, but I see some people what they're doing, and I'm just like, it's not me. One day I'll probably give in, and we'll probably I was really annoyed the other night because I was watching that the Chris Hardwick show at midnight, and there's a whole section where you like tweet stuff in, and I had so many good ideas for like puns on terrible movies. So like that was maybe the thing that will get me on Twitter.
Well, keep us posted, please.
But if anyone wants to go on and like slate the people who pretend to be me, you can. Like, I don't know what they're doing with their time. Have at them.
You have such freedom to, I guess, at this point you're very blessed, I guess, to be able to choose projects that excite you and work with people that you want to. Is there anyone that you're dying to... you've worked with so many amazing people already, but is there anyone you're still dying to work with?
Yeah, I mean, like, the Coen brothers would be some of my favourite filmmakers ever. Obviously them. Christopher Nolan, I think, does amazing... you know, ambitious work, and I just think that's so, you know, exciting to see from a British director. I like working with kind of, I don't know, interesting people. I would also love to, like, do a film with Martin McDonagh, because I love his movies, and I really, I don't know, even if it was just, like, a bit part and I get killed really quickly, like, that'd be fun. That was what I loved about the beginning of Seven Psychopaths, was that opening shot. But that won't mean anything to anyone who hasn't seen it, so go watch it.
And are there any roles, I mean, as you grow up? I guess I am fascinated to think of where your career's going, 40s and 50s and 60s. What kind of roles? I mean, I know.
I'll be happy to just be going then, you know? Okay. I'll do... Basically, after 60, I'll take any job. I think I'm always attracted to original work, and that's why it's very hard for me to say, like, what kind of thing I want to go on to next.
Unless it's Broadway, because it's always been revivals.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I do really want to do a new play as well. That's something I've never done, and I talk to people about, like, the experience of working on a new play, and it just sounds incredibly exciting because you get to shape it. And I've always had the sort of the fantasy of, you know, when you get a play and you open it and it says in the front, like, this was originally performed by so-and-so, and, like, lists the original cast. I've always had, like, a fixation on really wanting to be on that page for some reason. So, you know, hopefully I'll get to do that one day.
Well, so something new that you're actually doing for the first time is a romantic comedy with What If, which is coming out later this summer. Is that a genre that you wanted to do?
Good version of it. Yeah, obviously. Like, I mean, I think that, like anything, there's a lot of, you know, really bad romantic comedies, and I wanted to do a really good one. And it's, but I do think it's, I mean, the trailer is great and is very sweet, but it almost makes it look, you know, the film's slightly a little edgier and filthier than the trailer would sort of would give away, I think. And it's a really smart film, and it's funny, and it's like the, it was great fun because I didn't have to, you know, break down or get covered in blood or die or kill someone or, you know, so it was, so that was great. And I it was a really, you know, it was just a nice shoot and a really fun, cheerful experience. And I do think it achieves a very, it pulls off a really cool thing, which is that it makes you happy. It's a film that makes you happy without sort of being overly sentimental or manipulative. It's just, it's a really good time. And you know, and Zoe Kazan and Adam Driver and Megan Park, all these people who I think you're going to see, like, a lot more of in the next few years. Well, of course, Adam, because he's, you know, cool. In Star Wars. But, yeah, it's going to be, it's a really cool cast. So hopefully, yeah, enjoy.
So obviously this movie talks a lot about the relationships between guys and girls and, you know, the friendship. For those who don't know, in the film, you fall for someone who's in a relationship. Do you think guys and girls can just be friends based on your own personal life experience?
Well, like,
and what do you think of this thing called the friend zone?
Okay, friend zoning is like a terrible thing. The idea of the friend zone is a terrible male idea. Have you ever heard a girl say they're in the friend zone?
It's
a thing that I think men should be really careful about using, and I'm being particularly because every, like, at one point I think friend zone was like when they were kicking around new titles for What If, before What If was chosen, I think that came up and I was like, no, don't do that. But it's because, do I think men and women can be friends? Yes, absolutely. Do I think men and women that who are romantically or sexually attracted to each other can just be friends? It will probably always become an issue at some point, whether you, like, deal with it and just talk about it and then move on, or, like, it's always gonna, I think, sort of, you know, get dealt with eventually. I definitely think the idea of a friend zone is just men going, this woman won't have sex with me.
So have you personally ever had a relationship? Have you ever had a relationship in your life that's paralleled kind of this, or like where you developed feelings for someone?
Sort of, but only in as much as we sort of, I was very, very good friends with somebody, and then we had a moment when we could have sort of like got together and then didn't, and then it's definitely been like the best thing for both of us. Like, we're still really good friends because of that decision.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very happy with that.
So you never had to have that conversation and be like, we're bringing our relationship to this different level, new
No,
place.
I haven't. I'm glad. I look forward to not having that one day.
So Victor Frankenstein, obviously this the new title. You know, it's your first big blockbuster since Potter. Have there been other roles that you've turned down in huge studio films?
The thing about Victor Frankenstein was that I like doing big, fun, like, adventure-y type movies as well. And I've been on the lookout for something. But there is an unfortunate dearth of really great scripts in coming out of studios that are also kind of big budget and, you know, all that kind of thing. So it's, I really wanted to do something that did feel kind of bigger and sort of slightly more, you know, it's a pretty mad film and it's a really crazy adaptation, you know, reimagining of Frankenstein. It was really fun kind of stepping back onto that set and being in that sort of environment again. But the thing I really liked about the script was that it, even though it is like a studio film and you know, it's a Frankenstein movie, so people sort of have ideas about what they know about that going in, it's such a weird, imaginative, crazy script. And you know, there is room for kind of discussion of the ideas that are discussed in the original Frankenstein about sort of the advance of technology and man's relationship to it. So that we find time for all that amongst all the pulling switches and it's alive and all that.
Awesome. So I have to ask, you know, what are you going to do after Inishman closes?
I'm going to go and, like, promote the hell out of What If and talk to more people like you. And, well, not like you. No one's like you, obviously. I'll just be going off and doing that, basically, for a couple of months.
No,
and
big
then
film on the horizon?
Hopefully, I'm in the point where if I said anything about the film I hope to do next, it would definitely jinx it. So, hopefully, I'll get to film something else before the end of the year. Would be very happy
awesome.
With that.
Okay, yeah. I want to jump and do a really quick rapid fire.
Okay.
Just quick.
Gold.
I know, it'll be okay.
Okay.
It's gonna be fine. Okay, favorite movie?
12 Angry Men.
Okay, favorite band?
Pixies.
Do you cook?
No.
Oh, okay. Are you bummed about England being out of the World Cup?
I am, but, like, England's World Cup failure is almost, like, nostalgic for me now. Like, it's such a feature of my life and my childhood that I'm just like, oh, it's nice. And actually, and now, like, I go with the thing of kind of, you know, the team that sort of knocks you out is the one you should support. I'm not going to support Italy or Uruguay, but I'm rooting for Costa Rica now because they are, like, getting through. Yeah. They're playing amazing. This is awesome.
Okay, do you watch Game of Thrones?
I don't.
Okay, boxers or briefs?
Boxers.
Favorite day of the year?
My birthday? It just came into my head, but I don't know why.
Favorite word?
Because I'm such a nerd. Verdurous.
Sorry. 1%, 2% skim or whole milk?
Oh, now, what's the English equivalent? Well, I have semi-skimmed in England. I don't know what that is out of what you just said.
I'm just going to go with semi-skim.
Okay.
Okay, favorite sport to watch?
Favorite sport, American football.
Play?
Just running, I guess. Is that a sport? Yeah.
If
someone's chasing you.
Okay. Do you believe in magic?
In what sense? Like, yeah.
Okay, puppies or kittens?
Puppies.
Bacon or Nutella?
Bacon.
Okay, is there any performer you'd drop everything to see?
I mean, probably Pixies or Tom Lehrer. Yeah, no one knows him. One person
does.
We
do. last person who texted you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I could get out, but I don't know where is it. Probably, I don't know. I really don't know. It's
okay.
Could be one of many people, but none of them are exciting answers.
Okay. Would you ever start another franchise?
Yes.
Which one?
I don't know. There are some that would be really fun, probably, but I don't know. Like Batman, like that's if they reboot that again, I'll do that too.
Yeah, I'd see that.
Well, it's happening, isn't it? With Ben Affleck, I could be like, you know, I could be Robin. I'm perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. If you had to join a social network, what would it be? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
I'm actually on Instagram. I do have an Instagram. I just don't have like a thing there.
Okay. and then what's the last thing that made you cry?
A movie called Undefeated, which you should all watch. It's a sports documentary about a high school football team, and it is like, I cried, I think, 4 times between like in the last 45 minutes of the film. Wow. Like at 4 completely, not like re-crying at something I saw before, 4 completely separate instances of crying. And it's just an amazing film.
Awesome. Yeah. You survived rapid fire.
Thank God. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Okay, so now we have one last game that we're going to play, and it's called Celebrity Sorting Hat.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Ah, hey, that's not bad.
So, we're going to give you the four houses here.
Oh, do I have to decide who's in
and
there?
I'm going to pull some fun people out. And
I already can't put anyone in Slytherin, because that's just me.
Okay, well, we'll see. You don't know who's in this.
I don't.
This hat. Okay.
Is Kim Jong-un in there? Oh, well,
Meryl Streep.
I'm just going to, like, claim all the cool people from Gryffindor. Okay. By the way. Like,
what, any reason why?
Because she's awesome, and awesome people go to Gryffindor.
Okay. Benedict Cumberbatch.
See, I think he's got a bit of... He is somebody I associate with great intellect, so I'll go with Ravenclaw there.
Yeah.
That was like a murmur of agreement. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Oh, well, we can put these two away. I'm gonna claim Gryffindor as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
His family, not him himself, but his family and daughters came to the set once, so they've actually been. They sort of probably did get sorted into a house in the Great Hall. Oh, I presented. I can't remember whose birthday it was, actually. It was one of his daughter's birthdays, and I presented them with the cake in the Great Hall.
Oh my God.
As part of their birthday.
Can you do that for my birthday? Okay, Andrew Garfield.
Oh, see, it's really hard, this, because, I mean, like, he's awesome, and I don't... Because, like Hufflepuff has always implied, like, a little bit of, like, dimness in the books and in the films. So, like, I don't want to put either of them in, like... He's obviously not nasty, and he's obviously not dim. So, you pick, Andrew. You can go in either.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm going to be diplomatic about this. I like him.
Always has
a... Okay, fine. Well, that's all right, then. Ravenclaw, just to even it out.
Okay, all right. Miley.
Oh man, you're making me do this. And especially after what I just said about all the other houses. Come on, Miley. Come to Gryffindor. We'll sort you out.
Okay.
Come on, you're in there. We'll sort you out. There we go.
Okay. Now, Mr. John Hamm.
Oh, John. Awesome. John's like a combination of Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff, because he does have that kind of goofy streak. I'm just gonna, John, because I know you and I know you won't take offense to this, I'm putting you in Hufflepuff.
Okay, I'm going through these quick.
The Queen? Well, I am not a monarchist, but there's something very regal about ravens, maybe.
Okay. All right.
Well done, Queenie.
Okay, forget Harry Styles.
Harry Styles. Well, he's kind of got a bit of a mane himself, hasn't he? So let's go with that. There you go.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay, going through. Emma.
Emma. Oh well. I mean, Gryffindor, obviously. Yeah.
Okay. Ian McKellen.
McKellen. He's just awesome. So, I don't know. He actually left me a note in my dressing room because he's been in the theatre before me. And I had a rolling mat from him saying, like, you'll need this for the show you're doing. So, like, enjoy. How cool is that? Yeah, a note from Ian McKellen. Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, he is wise. So, Ravenclaw.
Okay.
Who else we got? You've got a load in there, man.
Okay.
Have you got some?
Kanye.
Wow. Did someone just shout Slytherin? Oh, man. I think he'd kind of be happy with that, though.
Okay.
let's go. I'm going to get hell for this. I'm sorry, dude. I just, in the name of variety, you're going with the green
one. Oh, my gosh. Gosling.
I mean, he's...
I mean...
I think I want him on my side. Yeah.
Yeah!
Yeah, for sure.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Why didn't you just use the big cardboard cutout you have of him there?
I know. Awesome. We can't cut that apart.
No.
Come on.
No, I didn't mean decapitate it. I just meant use that. I didn't want that to happen.
Beyonce. Queen
Beyonce.
Come on.
The thing is, like, it's now like a judgment on the character, and I don't know any of these people. Let's have a crowd vote on this one. Probably you know some of Beyonce. You know her, probably.
We know.
Hufflepuff, somebody said. Thank you. We'll go with Hufflepuff. Somebody shrinking down in the corner just said Hufflepuff.
Maggie Smith.
Oh, Maggie Smith. I'm gonna go Ravenclaw because she's very smart, but she's also like a little bit stern sometimes, and like you wouldn't want to cross her. So we'll go with that.
Awesome. Okay, two more. Emma Stone.
Emma Stone, another person I don't know at all. I know her, obviously, I don't know her. Gryffindor. When in doubt,
okay.
You know.
Oh, and last but not least.
Well, I'm going to put him in the house he was in as well, because that's only fair.
Yeah.
Awesome. There you go.
I am sorry you are now covered in glitter.
That's all right. It'll be like, it'll be Hedwig and the Angry Inch comes to Inish Mom tonight.
Yes.
Great.
Well, thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much, man.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure you have it.
Awesome. I got it. Thank you very much. Cheers, everybody.